From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, October 6, 2017. And on this day, what's happening with the $11 million Governor LePage moved from control by the Attorney General to control by the legislature, and an unusual solution for a common problem in foster care. That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
A day after Governor Paul LePage ordered the transfer of nearly $11 million out of a fund controlled by the Maine Attorney General's office, the Attorney General is speaking out. Janet Mills told Maine Public Radio that she's still assessing the effects of the governor's action and is considering a lawsuit. Mal Leary reports.
The account in question contained money the state of Maine received in successful lawsuits against Volkswagen and the financial ratings company Moody's. In a written statement on Thursday, LePage said he ordered the funds transferred out of the Attorney General's office to another account that will require legislative approval before it can be spent. LePage said it was wrong for Mills to have sole control over the money, even though state law gives her that discretion. But Mills says the governor is mistaken and his actions violate a court order, state law, and the Maine Constitution.
It would behoove him to pick up the phone and call me. If he has concerns about a particular fund or particular account, call me and ask me what we're doing with it. I'd be happy to tell him that.
She says money from the fund has gone to a wide array of programs over the last 30 years. It has also helped defray the costs of lawsuits brought against groups that have caused harm to Mainers. For example, Mills is currently working with a group of attorneys general from across the country to investigate the practices of opioid manufacturers. Without money at her disposal, Mills says she may not be able to move forward with a lawsuit in that case or in others that have not yet been brought to light. She has her staff assessing the impact of the governor's action.
So some of that money is allocated to salaries. I'll be looking at whether we can continue to pay the salaries that we are budgeted to pay out of that account and the expenses that we're budgeted to pay.
On Friday, the governor's office released a statement from the state controller, refuting Mills' assertion that she's authorized to spend settlement funds. Mills disagrees and says she's considering all legal options, including suing the LePage administration, to get a court ruling on the issue. Meanwhile, there have been some concerns about $6 million in the AG's account that is needed to balance the budget. Appropriations Committee co-chair Democrat Drew Gattine of Westbrook says committee staff believe language in the budget makes it clear that even though the money has now been transferred, it can still go where it was supposed to go, to the state's general fund.
I'm hoping that he's going to honor the budget and move that money into the unappropriated surplus by October 30th. But that's the deadline that I'm going to be watching.
Gattine says if the money is not transferred by the administration to the general fund, the legislature will have to act in the January session to ensure that the state budget remains in balance. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
For a few hours this morning, offices at the Robbins Lumber Mill in Searsmont were transformed into a Senate hearing room as Senator Angus King presided over an Energy Committee field hearing on how rural industries could be strengthened by developments in energy technologies. The Robbins family, for example, is in the process of installing a $36 million 8.5-megawatt combined heat and power unit that's expected to reduce costs at the mill and sustain forestry jobs. A.J. Higgins has more.
The cogeneration process at the mill involves a power station that can produce both electricity and heat. And when the source of the energy is a residual wood product, such as sawdust or low-value wood cuttings, it saves money for the manufacturer, and it also creates a demand for low-grade wood. King says the Robbins Mill Energy Project could serve as a model for other rural Maine industries that are desperately attempting to lower power costs.
What we're talking about here is a project that will make electricity but will use low-grade and waste wood. It will provide steam for the kilns. It will provide steam for, we hope, an adjacent manufacturer or an adjacent user on the same property. It'll provide ash that can be used in aggregate for roads or for land treatment. We're going to use everything from the pig but the squeal.
Industry stakeholders at the hearing offered suggestions for encouraging wider use of what's known as CHP technology, as well as support for King's Biomass Thermal Utilization Act of 2017, bipartisan legislation that would establish a tax credit for business and home use of high-efficiency biomass heating equipment. Alden Robbins, part of the fifth generation to operate the family lumber business in Searsmont, said federal legislation that would more easily permit the widespread use of CHP technology is key to the recovery of the Maine forest products industry.
My sawmill struggles every year to bring in our raw material because the loggers can no longer realize the revenue from the residuals and the low-grade pulpwood they once did.
King says his biomass legislation seeks to achieve parity between other forms of renewable energy and thermal biomass systems. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
Finally today, when a child enters the foster care system in Maine, the goal is to reunite them with their parents. Less than half of kids ever are. Even when reunification is successful, the temporary separation can be traumatic. One family in Old Town recently tried a unique arrangement to avoid that trauma. A woman agreed to foster an entire family, parents included. Patty White has the story.
I know, right? Say, Grandma. Show her. Grandma.
For more than three decades, Bette Hoxie of Old Town, along with her husband, who has since passed away, has been raising kids, three of her own, eight who are adopted, and 150 foster children. At age 71, Hoxie now has more than three dozen grandchildren. Nine-month-old Landon is one of them. Hoxie steps away from the homemade applesauce she's stirring on the kitchen stove to play with Landon. He's been living with her for nearly 6 months, and so have his parents.
I'm Robert Seely.
Bonnie Seely.
Rob is one of the 150 foster kids who lived under Hoxie's roof. He was just a toddler when he and his brother came to live with her. It was only for a few months, but their relationship continued for years. They'd frequently stay at Hoxie's house on weekends and during summers. Now 35, Rob still calls her Mom Bette.
With Mom Bette and her husband Joe, I don't think I've ever felt more of having a family life than I was here.
Rob's life has been turbulent. As a child, his mother married and divorced several times. He has a history of substance use. He started with pain medication, then moved to heroin, cocaine, and meth. He got arrested for making meth in early 2016.
To be honest, I'm glad I got caught.
By this point, Rob and Bonnie had been together and using drugs for several years. Rob's arrest and the news around this time that Bonnie was pregnant became the impetus for them to stop. But their history put them on the radar of the Department of Health and Human Services, and there was a possibility that Landon would be taken into state custody.
It is scary, you know, because you don't know if something's going to happen, if they're going to take your son, and you're not going to get him back.
Soon after Landon was born, Rob served a three-month jail sentence. Once he was released, Rob was only allowed to see his son once a week for 2 hours. He didn't have a place to live, so Rob asked Hoxie if he could stay at her house.
It's just a safe place, you know. I knew that there wasn't drugs around and to need a stable place that I knew someone would care.
Hoxie took Rob in, but the separation from Landon was painful for everybody, says Bonnie.
That was really hard. He's my baby, and I wanted him to be a part of, I wanted him to be with his father, too. We got married for that reason. We wanted to have our family together.
Hoxie also wanted to see the family together.
I'd always thought, you know, when I was doing foster care, that if families could stay together, they'd be much more successful. And I've seen the damage, quite honestly, of what happens when kids are disrupted from their families. And for a newborn to have that happen, I mean, they naturally attach to the person that caretakes for them 24/7.
She offered to take in the whole family and worked with DHHS to devise a safety plan where Rob and Bonnie would have 24/7 supervision. Hoxie still works. She's the director of Adoptive and Foster Families of Maine, so her adult daughter who lives at home would supervise the couple during the day. Hoxie would supervise on evenings and weekends. Bonnie and Landon officially moved in April. It was an adjustment, says Bonnie.
We couldn't be alone with him at all because they were afraid of relapse. And I understand that. But at first it kind of made me really upset because being a parent, it's hard to have someone say, you can't have your son all the time.
It was clear from the beginning, says Hoxie, that Rob and Bonnie were competent taking care of Landon, but they had other issues to work out.
I mean, it wasn't always perfect. There were times when we wondered, are they really going to be successful? Not because of substance abuse, but they needed lots of counseling between the two of them.
Rob and Bonnie do go to counseling for trauma and substance use, as required by DHHS. They also take optional parenting classes. Hoxie and her daughter coach and encourage them at home. Rob says even doing typical family things have helped, like going apple picking with other members of Hoxie's family and sitting down to Sunday dinners.
It's a structural family, you know. It's an actual family life. You know, when you've had a rough life, to have someone that cares about you so much and help you through everything that you need and the support, and it changes the person, you know, to know that someone could love you so much after you've done so wrong.
Landon is not Rob's first child. He has 9 others from previous relationships. He says drugs have kept him out of their lives, but this arrangement with Hoxie is a chance to be a different kind of father to Landon.
Daddy got you.
By mid-September, the family has lived with Hoxie for 5 months. Rob and Bonnie have gradually earned unsupervised time with Landon, first hours, then days, then overnights. They're anxious to be free of supervision altogether, but they have to wait for permission from DHHS. During lunch one day, the phone rings and Hoxie picks it up. A couple minutes later, she pokes her head into the dining room.
It's lifted.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yay. God. Landon, we did it.
DHHS has lifted their supervision. Rob lowers his head down to Landon's and cradles it between his hands.
We did it.
As soon as they find housing, Rob and Bonnie can move out on their own. On average in Maine, it takes a little more than a year for a family involved in foster care to reunify and leave the system. Rob and Bonnie were able to do it in less than half that time.
Without Mom being our support and her being here for us, we wouldn't be here right now. We wouldn't be this good off.
A spokeswoman for DHHS says the arrangement with Rob, Bonnie, and Bette Hoxie was unique, and there are no plans to grow the model. But Hoxie thinks it could be replicated and that other families would benefit.
And I don't think it's easy, and I don't think it's 100% that it's going to work. But I think that for those families that are willing to give it a try, I wish there was more of an incentive within the department to make it happen.
As much as Rob and Bonnie have accomplished in the past several months, Rob says he knows there are challenges ahead.
We have a challenge to prove to the world that we can do this and that we're never going to relapse and see where life takes us.
Wherever that is, Rob and Bonnie plan to live near Hoxie so she can be a regular part of their life. Landon needs his grandma, they say, and they need her too. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, October 6, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty. Have a great weekend.